and welcome to TBD Beyond the Basement. My name's Dan, and I'm back in the studio with our man from Cannes and my co-host Trev for this week's interview. Do you like what I did there, Trev?
My man from Cannes, huh? There you go. I'll take it.
But before we get started, I'd like to ask you to take a few seconds to give us a follow, subscribe, or like, depending on your podcast platform of choice, so that each week you can get notified when a new episode of TBD drops. This week, we've got not one but two guests, both from the Florida-based esports team Misfits Gaming Group, and I'm delighted to welcome Will Pazos, SVP of Bloodborne, and an old friend of mine, Vass Roberts, EVP, Head of Global Partnerships. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much, gents. Pleasure to be here.
Vass, do you realise it's been almost 6 years since we first met? And it was on a podcast.
It was. Was that the one on which
it was on Pete Townsend's studio boat in the St. Catherine's Dock in London.
It was one of the most random experiences I've ever had, I think. Yeah, but it was, that was a setup though, right? Wasn't it that, weren't there a comedian on just before
we were? Do you remember which comedian it was? We were waiting to get out of the studio so we can get in.
I do. I can't remember his name, but yeah.
Romesh Raghunathan.
Yes, it was. Yeah,
he's doing his pod. We were waiting for him to, because he was running over.
That was
as random as you could possibly get. And not every pod has been like that. None, to be honest. This one's definitely not like that.
But it's good to be back on one.
I was going to ask you, Vass. Obviously, that was 6 years ago, and it was new into sports, and esports was just coming to the rise. What do you think? Can you summarize the kind of biggest changes you've seen in that time?
I just think that, and I think we probably spoke about this at the time. For me, I just think that the whole thing of esports and gaming has been, this ain't a change in habits, right? This is a cultural shift, and I think that consumer habits in terms of content and media consumption has completely changed, and the kind of gaming and esports ecosystem has just benefited from that hugely, because it's digitally native. Everybody wants to hang out and choose content when and where they want to watch it. YouTube, Twitch are the places to be, the destinations to be. So I think we've just seen it more of a progression into a digital environment, which has just naturally benefited people that work within the gaming and esports ecosystem.
It's a hard one to wrap up. It's a really, really kind of a all-encompassing question to ask you to summarize 6 years of esports and gaming in 30 seconds. But probably the first question we should have asked is, can you give us a quick bit of a background of Misfits and kind of your roles both within it?
Yeah, for sure. I can go first. So yeah, Vass Roberts, as you already pointed out. So I lead our global partnerships team. So essentially my responsibility is to make sure that we are speaking to the right partners and representing them correctly across all of the assets that we own and operate. That's my in a nutshell version.
And I'm Will Pazos, currently the SVP of Bloxborn, which is our new blockchain gaming arm. Previously head of data and analytics at Misfits for about 2 years. And the way I kind of got into esports was I had started in 2017 a Twitch marketing platform that was basically built for agencies and brands to scour Twitch and understand what chat was saying during different campaigns. Because a lot of tools were built early on for social media, for Twitter and YouTube and everything. But Twitch being an early platform and me being obsessed with gaming since I was young growing up in Singapore, naturally, we just wanted to build something to help people to understand what gamers actually said about your brand. Because a lot of times you'd go speak to the agency after and they'd be like, oh, they loved it. And you look through chat and it's just people flaming the product or whatever it is. So currently, finally, working in blockchain, which is something I got passionate about last year. Lost a lot of money, bought a lot of dumb NFTs, and slowly starting to learn the ropes of how blockchain makes sense in the world of gaming. And honestly, super stoked to show up to work every day. It's a blessing.
I like the way you lost a load of money first before you said you'd go and work in the space.
Yeah, you kind of have to. It's trial by fire with blockchain.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people, want to stay safe and not jump in the water, but especially with the gaming side of blockchain, if you're not going to jump into one of these guilds and actually talk to the people that are playing these games that, to be fair, and most people, aren't willing to say it, but the games aren't that great yet. But you hear their passion and you hear, the same story. They've been in crypto since 2017. CryptoKitties came out. They saw the concept that this could be gamified and you could have real ownership and the whole thing. But along the way, you've just had a load of bad actors. And, if you're not willing to get your hands dirty a little bit in crypto, you're really not going to learn much. So, yeah, had to sacrifice half my paychecks last year for that.
Nice. No, I absolutely agree, and it's not going to be my first question, but as a bit of commentary, you know, I fully agree. This is the university of life here, you know, and it's getting in, it's learning, it's making those mistakes, and you know, I fully agree with talking to a lot of the guilds. You know, I think it's interesting, but I think probably have a whole chat in itself and get sidetracked very quickly on that. But I think to roll back a small bit, you know, and it's something kind of Vaz said at the very start of this, and the industry moving more and more digital. And I guess it's probably a nice way to start actually today, because good news is always, we might end on bad news. We'll see how we go, but we'll start with good news. The third most followed esports team around. I mean, where do you see, you know, Misfits sitting in the esports ecosystem, and, you know, how do you position yourselves the likes of, you know, FaZe and 100 Thieves, for example, which are maybe transcending esports, you know, and becoming more lifestyle brands?
Great question, and thanks for the acknowledgement. Yeah, it's great for us to finally pop into those top 10s on Twitter. So yeah, I think we are the most tweeted about team in the US, seventh most tweeted about team in the US, and third most engaged team globally, which is a phenomenal achievement for us and kind of aligns with what we're trying to achieve as a business. So in terms of how we're different, I think we are quite uniquely positioned, because I think, you know, the gaming industry has a reputation for being, you know, having a bit of aggression, male domination, quite egotistical characters. So that's kind of long been the reputation of the industry, but that's not who we are. And the clue's in the name with Misfits, right? So we are about positivity. We're about tolerance. We're about inclusivity. And for us, you know, we want people to stand out and not fit in and be themselves. So that's always been kind of the core values of our business. And our kind of tagline is dare to be different. But for us, yeah, you know, we compete, we want to win, of course, but it's bigger than that for us. We generally want to be agents of change within the gaming industry. So the assets that we're starting to accrue, or the areas that we're going into as a business, directly relate and translate to what we're trying to achieve as a business. So, you know, you've seen us move. Yeah, we've got the esports franchise teams. You know, we've got a lot of teams in that space, but we're now kind of moving into, and you touched on it with 100 Thieves and FaZe, you know, more lifestyle brands. So we are, or we consider ourselves, a media and entertainment business. It just so happens that our vertical within entertainment is in gaming and esports. So as we kind of roll back the curtain a bit, we're starting to move more into a broader gaming ecosystem. And you would have probably seen our move into Minecraft, for example. And the reason we went into Minecraft is because, you know, the community within Minecraft is the perfect embodiment of what we represent in terms of positivity, inclusivity, and the content creators that now represent our brand, again, are the perfect embodiment of the core values of our business. So I think that's where we're unique. You know, we're not the cool kids. We're not the people who are going to, you know, do a million hoodies on a drop. But, you know, we think about things that are probably more impactful in the ecosystem and genuinely trying to do good.
You touched on it a little bit. I mean, all your values as an esports company and esports teams generally, I mean, what value can an esports organization bring to Web3 gaming, do you think?
I think in the short term, it's tough to answer that question. I think the Web3 gaming, what it's going to be, what it is still fleshing itself out. I think in the long term, a tremendous amount. You know, the same way esports has stabilized partnerships and careers for people in gaming, I think the same thing happens for Web3. I think as, you know, the games get better and we understand, you know, if there's going to be a competitive element to it, it's just a matter of org stepping in and help, you know, adding stability. So helping players sign contracts, offering sponsors a safety net and opportunities that they can't get, you know, necessarily with individual influencers or players. But I think right now our job in trying to understand everything is to kind of just lay low, keep our ear to the ground and learn, because, you know, in our opinion, Web3 gaming is still 3 to 5 years out. So right now it's just a period to build, but in terms of what we can offer, you know, immediately, it's, you know, we're still figuring that out.
And I'd one for Vas as well. And, you know, again, going back to those values that you talked about, how much does that influence the brands that you're talking to as well? Do you have that as a kind of filter to say yes or no, you know, we're not going to leap on this trend, for example, we want to go in a slightly different direction?
There is definitely consideration in who we work with. I'm a big believer that if a company shares or holds similar values to yourself, then it presents a better opportunity for a mutually beneficial partnership. So that's something that we definitely look for. You know, we've gone past fishing with a net, right? We now try to fish with a rod. So it's what brands do we feel would work well with team A or asset B? So we try to go out there and look at that appropriately. So, you know, we HyperX is a good example, who are starting to work with us on our Valorant team. So our Valorant team is an all non-male organization. And that was something that was very important to HyperX. You know, they really want to push the message around diversity and inclusion and women in games. So for us, that was an obvious fit. So yeah, absolutely. We don't go out to the market, you know, carefree trying to chase dollars. What we're trying to chase is a synergistic partnership with people where we know that we can both get common value out of it.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I think the synergy has to be there. And I guess it kind of leads us into, you know, another question for you, Vaz, before we get to Will. And don't worry, Will, we've plenty of questions for you, okay? But we're setting the stage, as we are. We're storytelling here. But
got it.
So, like, you look at the kind of the look and feel of a partner, and I think the Tezos news, it followed hot on the heels of their own announcement with Man United. So you get that kind of nice feel-good factor of an alignment with, you know, a more mainstream brand outside of certainly the gaming and esports space. That's obviously not the reason. So, like, you know, why Tezos, and what did you get? You know, what were you looking for from them? You know, what made you feel they were the right partner? And the reason I'm kind of asking that question is because we've seen some different reactions to crypto in the gaming space. You know, we've had the negative, we've had the positive, we've had the in-between, we've had the big deals, the cancellations. So it can be a tricky tightrope to walk.
It certainly can, yeah. And, you know, anybody who has entered into the kind of crypto or blockchain space hasn't come away unscathed from some sort of community backlash. So, you know, we were obviously conscious that that was a potential moving into it. But for us, when we looked at what we were doing, so we were speaking to a lot of people in the market. Obviously, it's a big area, people trying to invest into it. But we were looking at it, if we're going to do it, how can we do it in the right way? And for us, the reason it made sense is, you know, we've always had innovation at the heart of what we do. And we announced a while back that we have this self-funded incubator. And we want to kind of bring forward esports as an industry, or gaming and it as an industry. And that means looking at what the future of it might look like. So when we were talking to Tezos, there was a really clear alignment between them trying to develop the ecosystem from a game developer point of view. And I'm sure, you know, Will, who definitely better qualified to handle part two of this conversation, will go into it. But for us, just along the process, they just really wanted to listen and learn, which is, I don't need to tell you guys, is pretty unique in itself. Of course, brands want to put their own stamp onto it, but what they wanted to understand was how could they come and enter the space and add value? So we were very conscious about what partner we wanted to move forwards with, because we had in mind that we wanted to look at blockchain gaming. We believed that there's value in there in the long term. So it was about selecting the right partner that could help us with that. And Tezos have some obvious benefits in terms of energy efficiency compared to a lot of the others. You know, being proof of stake over proof of work helps massively, low transaction fees. So, you know, that's something we was very conscious of from the outset. But it really was around kind of what Will will talk about in a bit with his, and I've got to credit Will wholeheartedly for this. You know, Blockborn was something that he came up with the concept of and really drove the message. And between me and Will, we sat there and thought, well, Tezos are going to be the perfect partner for us to work with on this. So yeah, you know, lots of thought went into the process, and yeah, for us, there was one shining example of who the partner should be.
That's really interesting. And I guess, you know, reading between the lines, you know, it sounds like that Blockborn was the concept that had been developed regardless of whether it was Tezos, whether it was anybody else coming in. So I think, you know, a hat tip to you, Will, but you know, what was your role then in defining that, Will, and what is the aim for the platform?
I was in Vancouver, sitting there in my apartment, down on all my crypto stocks and everything, and probably down a good amount of my NFTs as well, and started to think of, okay, well, if, you know, blockchain gaming is going to be a thing, we definitely need to take a look at it. And, you know, true to the nature, we had just brought on a new CMO, Steve, who's from Activision, and he led this whole brand talk that, that the whole company listened to. And it's like, let's plant a flag, for the misfits out there in the gaming industry. And I was like, that same concept can apply to people who love blockchain. Like, if you go on Twitter, the mainstream hates on NFTs, hates on crypto and everything, but there is a very small, there's 3 to 5 million daily active users playing blockchain games. 82% of them are outside of the US and outside of the West, actually, you know, in third world countries, but that still leaves, you know, close to 1 million people, you know, in Western countries who are actively playing and engaging in these games. And it's like, there's no flag that's been planted for these people who say, you know what, we understand that blockchain is more than just a picture of a monkey selling for 400K. There's an opportunity here for digital ownership on your goods and to build these worlds that you can spend time in and pay your rent. Like, there's promise here. There just needs to be a brand that is willing to kind of, you know, stand up and back this technology and have a long tail view. And so the idea with Blockborn, I pitched to Vass and Justin, our other partnerships guy, and we went back and forth on it and refined it. And Vass was like, okay, you know, let's see if we can get a partner on board. Because honestly, to go build a new brand in the esports space and to build a software product like we are, you know, isn't cheap. And so it kind of had to be a back and forth between us to figure out how we wanted to approach, you know, the right partner. And with Tezos, what's crazy is outside of, yes, so there's a couple main things. One, the proof of stake thing is massive for us. Two, the low transaction cost is huge, because if you're going to play a game and everything's going to be an NFT eventually, I can't go and pick up water to refuel my mana bar in a game, and it's going to cost me $80 worth of gas fee to pay for a 10-cent item, right? So the most expensive transaction you'll pay with the new Ithaca push on Tezos is 10 cents. That's the most expensive transaction fee you can pay. Also, Tezos has a long tail view of gaming. So Tezos is known as the blockchain that's been very quiet over the last couple of years. They're extremely focused on building out their tech and kind of serving the core community. But unlike Polygon, Solana, and these bigger fish that are out there throwing partnerships left and right, promising them that they're going to get blockchain gaming, you know, to mass adoption in the next 2 years, which isn't going to happen and it's going to cause a lot of frustration, Tezos sees this as a 5, 10, 20-year play and is willing to kind of work slowly and find the right people to work with. And so with us, we talked to him about building out Blockborn, which is, you know, a couple different things, but at its core, it is that flag for the gamers on the Tezos ecosystem who are done listening to the mainstream and they're just like, okay, I'm done with that. Let's get on to the actual building. So for them, you know, it's a place where they can connect with other developers if they want to build a game, connect with artists if they need, you know, help developing that side of their game or their product. If you're a fan and you want to back products or projects in different games, you can, it's similar to a Kickstarter type situation where you can back and receive rewards and early access to games. And then we're also doing traditional things in the space that we do best at Misfits. You know, we're putting together somewhat of a guild. We're going to get involved with the different games that exist on Tezos and launch a couple tournaments. We have $50,000 committed this year to promote the kind of competitive esports ecosystem for blockchain gaming. But I could ramble about this forever, but I honestly forgot the original question. But with Tezos, it's been a beautiful partnership, and they align with us on so many different levels when it comes to ethos for blockchain gaming. And we're very complementary in terms of Misfits brings the gaming credibility, Tezos brings the blockchain credibility, and the idea is like, let's step back and let people build. So we're super excited and incredibly, you know, happy that Tezos joined us, because, you know, the community has been incredible.
On a plus note, Will, you answered that question without knowing you were answering that question. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just a lot.
what he didn't mention was that while he was making those losses in Vancouver, as a true amateur investor that I am, and I was taking his advice on some of them, I was also losing some money at the same time. Yeah.
Vass actually pitched me, or he sent me one that ended up doing like 8,000x. That we both missed out on, and that was my fault. I'd seen so many of like these scams, but that ended up being a winner, and he could have easily retired.
It haunts me to this day. Is this it was Gravitoken, wasn't it? It went up to something like 1.3 million or something stupid like that. And there was me dipping around about to spend $800 on it or something, and I could have walked away with a stupid mum. But anyway, yeah, I'll never forgive you for that one, Will.
I know.
We don't learn anything else from this. Then the one thing we can learn is never take any advice off Will when it comes to what to invest in.
Yeah. He's got the smarts in terms of how to build a product, but yeah, not an investing strategy.
I would back that.
There's so much to unpack there. Thanks for going through that, Will. There's loads in there. I'm curious of what the big thing that we've seen, you know, there's kind of, we've seen all the hype around, especially NFTs and crypto, and then kind of the backlash from it. What's the reaction been like from fans, especially when, you know, there's been some very kind of dubious launches and there've been some very underwhelming launches? What's the reaction been to it?
I've had a lot of conversations now about this, like why gamers hate NFTs and everything. My thesis on it is last year, influencers broke the fundamental kind of contract they have with their audience, which is the reason influencers and influencer marketing became so prominent in the last 5 to 10 years is because they ultimately are responsible for the products they put in front of their audience. And last year, a bunch of influencers went and shilled and sold and promoted these NFTs. Their audience bought into them. And then three weeks later, when the audience came back and said, hey, any progress update or what's this look, or, you know, what can I expect? They're like, oh, I'm not promoting that anymore. I'm out of it. And it kind of just destroyed, you know, NFTs were the medium, was the paint. But in terms of what they were doing, was just grabbing the bag and sabotaging that relationship, which is I'm here, I'm promoting this product. It's because I believe in it. And I think it has a fundamental, you know, use case or good for my audience. And so I think you can try and educate the gaming audience. I've been in this space for a while. I'm a gamer myself. It's very hard to educate anyone on Twitter. I think it's just a matter of time that, you know, healing needs to go on. So these next 2 to 3 years, the reason it's nice that we're coming in now is we get to silently build and foster this, you know, the hardcore blockchain community while the kind of mainstream heals from the damage that, you know, bad actors did with NFTs last year. But in terms of our reaction and our fans, I mean, I think they're going to be skeptical. And it's basically our responsibility to do everything we can to make sure we're addressing their concerns. So our platform is fully KYC. So no one on our platform can be, you know, under 18 years old. They're fully vetted. We have all their information. Obviously, we went with Tezos, which addresses massive environmental concerns for them. But again, like we can do everything right for them, and it still might not be enough. And so in that regard, our job really is to always do the right thing moving forward, build, you know, for a community that exists, and hope that, you know, we can prove to our main and core audience that, you know, in a year or two's time, you know, they can see what we've done and it kind of aligns with their values. But yeah, there was natural backlash. It's just kind of what happens right now on Twitter.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. I think, as Will pointed out, you know, there were some bad actors in the space, and it's very difficult for some people to forget things like that. So you almost have to reprove yourself. But I think that in the long term, people will realize that to say all NFT projects or all crypto projects are bad is like saying all people are bad, right? There are going to be people out there who do manipulate, and there are bad actors out there. But, you know, we are very conscious of stuff like that. We're working with a blockchain which is audited by PricewaterhouseCoopers, you know, which is not trivial in itself. So we're making all the right moves, and we just need to prove credibility in the space. And that's exactly what we intend to do.
Yeah, I think it's worth adding. We shouldn't feel the need, not saying that they are, but to defend, you know, doing innovation and doing projects. I mean, we're at the very early stage of blockchain, you know, and the beauty of NFTs and blockchain is the underlying technology and the enhancements it can bring. And there's going to be bad actors across everything, you know, every walk of life. I mean, you know, so that happens, you know. And I think that when we look at gaming down the line, I actually think we'll see a shift from the use of the term NFT, and whatever phrase emerges will actually change the outlook and approach that people have onto that. But I think if we kind of if we move away from that kind of ethos, and people will start seeing the real life utility to these things, it will go well. I suppose one other thing that came out of the announcement, I guess, is the accelerating piece, and Will touched on it a bit. But when you're looking at it from you know, a Misfits perspective. And I know it's about adding value to the community, and it's finding user cases from a blockchain viewpoint. But is there also something like that to find tech that like enhances Misfits' own offering, you know, as an esports organization or, you know, an entertainment organization, you know, because you're going to see some cool things apply, you know, they may not be a fit.
Yeah, we're really excited about what we're going to see from some of the applications. And yeah, you're right. I mean, look, for us, we and this is a mandate from our CEO, who's just a genuinely nice human being. Like, you know, he wants to give back to the community. He wants to give back to the ecosystem. And that means supporting businesses and startups that play a role in it. Like, if you think about it, without all of the service providers and the technology companies, esports doesn't really exist because you need all of those, the infrastructure behind it. So we're kind of looking for those next great ideas that are going to help amplify or transcend the esports ecosystem and be innovative stuff. And that might mean that we're able to diversify our portfolio as a business, which of course is something that we're trying to do as we look to scale as an organization. So yeah, there's multiple things that we're expecting to come out of the incubator. And we're just excited to see what it is. I mean, we really don't know what's going to come from it, but we just know that there's going to be a lot of cool ideas.
I know we could go on for ages on this, and there's so much to unpack from not just this, but Misfits again. So we'll probably have to get you on again to talk about this in a few months' time. But I just wanted to kind of finish off with, you know, you've got this partnership and Blockborn is kind of born out of this partnership. Where is your kind of ideal situation you would see yourself in 3 years, 5 years time if you're looking at the long game? Where do you hope to be with it?
On the Blockborn side, it's full-fledged community of builders, artists, game developers, everything connected within our ecosystem, using the launchpad, using the guild, whatever it is. Like, the idea is to just be the connective tissue, the same way we are for, you know, hopefully are trying to be for the Minecraft community, same for our League of Legends community, people who are fans of ours, the same concept for blockchain builders and people who want to take blockchain gaming to the next level.
Yeah, from a collective MGG point of view, you know, the North Star for us is pretty clear. I mentioned at the beginning, it's, you know, we want to be, as well as be agents of change in the gaming industry, we want to be the most engaged company within the gaming and esports industry. We got to number three in Q1, but, you know, there's a lot of work to do, of course. So you will see us diversify our portfolio, expand our offering, and move into areas where we feel are the most appropriate, aligned to our core values, and that are the most appropriate in terms of being able to help us achieve that goal of maximum engagement. Because I think, and Trev, you mentioned it at the front, and I talked about it a lot before, you know, visibility, exposure, impressions are great, but they are vanity metrics. We want to be able to engage with our community, our partners, to have meaningful and emotional connections with the audience and them. So that's ultimately what our aim will be moving forwards. And we don't know yet what those additional assets will be, but we have in mind what we want to achieve as a business.
Thank you very much, guys. I mean, it's a fascinating conversation. Definitely have to get you on again. I'll put some links in the notes afterwards so people can find out more about Misfits and more about Blockborn. But really appreciate you taking the time out. Thank you very much again. Always a pleasure.
Cheers, gentlemen. Cheers.